We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. It's very odd when these press events we sometimes get to come home, if you will.
We just finished.
Happy Tuesday to you. When we're recording this, we've just finished being involved in a press event launch. You saw the pictures on Instagram for the new Mercedes 7 Series, the GLS. We can't really talk about it yet. The embargo's not lifted. There is a video coming, but the event. Like all these press events, is attempting to spoil you so you like the car more.
Yes,
and it was about a 5-minute drive from where I live. So they didn't have to fly us in. They didn't have to put us up.
Yep.
We were the cheapest dates of this entire group.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm another six minutes up the road from you.
Yeah,
exactly.
We're very close. It's cool to be able to share Utah roads with everybody coming in and many people. I sat next to a gal from New York, and she said she'd never been to Utah. And shout out to Kara from Noble Magazine. Kara,
cool.
How are you? Nice to meet you. And really, really cool to meet her and just, you know, share these roads and, you know, share what we love about driving here in Utah. It was really, really cool.
Well, speaking of that, that leads nicely into the fact we're doing a meetup here in Utah in August. It's on our website, everydaydriver.com, on the Adventures tab. We're doing a meetup right here. You can drive these roads with us. You can get on our local track. It is a total a la carte thing. It's not an expensive trip. You can do it however you would like to do it. You can bring a car and you can rent a car, whatever. That is August 2nd through the 4th. It's right there on the website, so we'd love for you to sign up for that. Many of you have already. Thank you. We're excited about that happening. And while I'm talking signups, I may as well say it.
Okay.
Pilgrimage is happening too. Pilgrimage
yes,
is happening
is.
This fall. We're very excited. We got a good group going. We have passed, just so you know, we have passed the refund point if you wanted to put a deposit in and refund because you can't go. But we are not to the deadline yet of going at all. If you're thinking about going, you can still sign up. There are still spaces. We do have cars locked in for the folks that have already done it. We might not be able to lock in your dream car if you schedule now, but we will do everything we can with our friends at RSR. We would love to have you go to the Ring and Spa with us. It's going to be an awesome trip this year.
You know what's funny is being at this press event with Mercedes, everybody from Germany has come over, and it's fun to talk about the trip that you and I do. And it's their hometown, and many people are from Stuttgart. They work at the mothership in Stuttgart, or they're from the area, or they're from Frankfurt. And it's only gotten me more excited talking to all of our German friends at Mercedes. And thanks to Mercedes for doing this. It was really different and interesting, and they put a lot of effort in. They have six groups because this is the world premiere of the GLS, the new big boy, and they're flying people in from all over the world because the premiere is right here. I mean, it's steps from
it's
our
insane.
House practically.
Yeah it's
from
crazy.
Our houses. And it's pretty fun to have it here, even though, you know, maybe they'll come back, but who knows? It just seems like more and more car manufacturers are discovering this area for the roads and, you know, just space and no traffic and all that stuff. Although I did hear there were definitely some cops out, you know, when you see these... All the journalists are like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeehaw. And I think the cops started to get wind by the end of the day. We'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. It may be a very interesting time to be on the roads the next couple of days, for sure.
Well, guys, it's that time again. We've got a really good lineup of car conclusions from those of you who have written to us
very cool.
with things you bought, cars you bought. And what's cool is a couple of you wrote to us, and your episodes, they weren't even featured on the podcast. It was just by listening to the podcast that you have come away with newfound wisdom and knowledge and desire to go get some fun cars. And so we didn't even feature them on the podcast, so we will cover those. Really, really cool. So they are, you don't actually have to have your debate featured on the podcast to write to us. I will say that. So if you have
For
bought
sure,
something
yeah.
and if it's, you know, the podcast has just gotten you thinking about what to buy next and you've discovered something.
For sure.
We'd love to know. And that's what we're featuring. So a couple of you have done that. And then a really interesting debate for Ben C. He's writing for a car for his wife and something for him as well. So we'll cover that before a ton of questions. We've been out all day long shooting the Mercedes and enjoying the new lodge here in Park City. Just a crazy venue. I can't believe it's
this
nice.
Yeah. It's a nutty venue. Well, the joke I kept making, and I almost wanted to do it, the joke I kept making was that I legitimately could have taken 20 minutes or so and mountain biked to the event.
Yeah.
And so there was a part of me that really wanted to show up just disgusting and nasty and sweaty and out of breath and pull off a bike helmet and be like, what nice car am I getting in now? Just to completely throw them for a loop.
Our friend,
they were already confused by the fact that you and I were showing up and we were outside the program but kept showing up for the event because we weren't staying at the lodge. It's very, very odd.
Yes, we were the outliers. Our friend Eric at Jalopnik said he thought you were half kidding about the mountain bike thing. He thought actually you were kind of serious about riding the mountain bike and showing up all gross and sweaty.
I really did.
It was pretty cool. It was nice chatting with him. And yeah, just meeting more people there at the event. Really, really cool. And of course, the venue is always nice, always very lovely. But yeah, we'd rather sleep in our own beds, you know, rather stay at our own houses.
Well, I also had to come home to, and I know I said had to, but it's just life. I had to come home and be a dad too. I mean, my wife's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yep.
So just this week specifically, a lot of things converged. I had to come home and be dad. And what's funny is I had to tell this story. My son, who is almost 10, he's 9 and a half now. He's getting very savvy about what you and I do.
Yeah,
and he already talks about the fact that
he's an employee of the show for sure.
He's an employee of the show. He works for the show. Of course he does. But this morning he comes down and looks at I was just about to leave to go on the drive. And he sees, because he's out of school now, he sees the envelope of information with the Mercedes logo on it and my badge hanging off the side. And he goes, Dad, you didn't tell me you had a press launch today.
I mean, just the fact that he knew and he's savvy enough. And
those words, yes.
He's a sharp kid. He really is.
So we talked about the press launch and all of that, and we got to show him the Mercedes a little bit today when we came home at one point for gear. So it was very, very funny. So, yeah, he's a part of the show, in case you're curious. He now works for us, apparently. That can only go wrong, but there's that.
All right, we've got to jump into these car conclusions here. Starting off from episode 393, this is Lance up in Northern California. Do you guys remember... the BMW i8, is the i8 a good idea? He got a car and he wrote to us, we got a car, actually two cars. Okay.
This did not go where I expected. It gets even weirder as it goes. Yeah.
It happens. He said their financial situation, he and his wife, it got rearranged in a bit that they are now hoping to buy a house in the next year or so. And like I said, they're up in San Francisco, North Bay area. Houses are expensive anywhere. They're expensive.
Yes, completely. Yep.
And so therefore he can't come close to justifying an i8 as cheap and, you know, tantalizing as in, you know, used i8 might
be.
They'll start coming down even more. You know, we still have time, no worries, but he couldn't do it. And he couldn't also stomach the idea of 30 grand for a used Tesla Model S, although I bet that area is littered with used Model S's for sale.
I bet you so. People dumping their 85s for sure. Yeah.
Yep. I bet you can get into one pretty good. But he couldn't do it. And so he spent some time shopping for used i3s, but he said that he drove one. He wasn't really thrilled with it because the rear doors aren't convenient really for his two kids. And the windows on the rear doors don't roll down. So I get the idea he was getting a lot of, Dad, what's going on? Nothing works like we think it does. I don't like this car. Yeah, this is weird and different. And, you know, it's got bamboo everything. And I don't like it. What's up with this? I can hear it.
Well, who was the designer that was bumped into bamboo and went, wait a minute, we need that in a car? It does seem like a strange leap, but that did happen on that car.
You know, we're exploring new materials and environmentally friendly materials, and you're exploring all that stuff. You reach bamboo at some point. You come screeching up to bamboo.
You turn the corner, and there's still a hallway of bamboo, and you just think, hey, wait a minute. Yeah.
It grows so quickly. I mean, there's more.
We can make more interiors in the next week. It'll be perfect. So in the midst of this, while driving all electric cars they could find and consider, Lance and his wife drove the e-Golf and were kind of shocked by it. They were really very impressed. And then they started thinking, okay, should we buy one of these used because they're really cheap used? Because in case you haven't followed along with this market, an electric car plummets faster than any car on the planet when it becomes a used car. I mean, these are cars with less than 100 miles of range. So they are really old tech. So the e-Golf are dropping, and they're going, wait a minute, should we get a used e-Golf? It'd be well under 10 grand. Well, their local Volkswagen dealer said, hang on. What if you got a brand new 2019 and I put in $10,000 on the hood for rebate, and then you cashed in the $10,000 government rebate, and they went, that's an awful lot off this car. So they got his...
That's astounding. 10 grand
on the
hood?
It is shocking.
Nobody does that. Nobody does that.
Totally. So since this is the brand new one, it's got a little over 100 miles of range, like 125 miles, 1,000, pardon me, 125 miles of range.
125,000 miles of range?
Wouldn't that be great?
Battery tech is mind-blowing.
It's gotten really good. Actually, you just charge it once, and you just drive it till you get rid of the car. Anyway, it won't
sound great. It comes charged, and it's a perpetual motion machine. They've done it, everyone. Volkswagen has done it.
Yes.
It's a perpetual motion machine.
That, you know what? That's the is that going to be Volkswagen's next scandal? That's the equivalent of the Dieselgate, but it's for...
Once marketing gets behind it, yes. Sorry, was that out loud?
Anyway.
Can't control my inner monologue sometimes.
So they got that EV, but his wife liked it so much, she said, this should be my car. So we now have an e-Golf for the wife. So then this is the twist I really didn't see coming.
Yeah.
Lance, who started with, should I get an i8, now has his wife in an e-Golf. So he gets a used e-Golf with 80 miles of range for about $10,000 and decides instantly to put H&R springs, lower it an inch, and put new wheels and tires on it to make it a grip handling machine that happens to also be electric. We went like left turn here, man.
I mean, we don't know if they're different colors. We don't know what the colors are, but you know, it's got to be differentiated from his wife's car just a little bit. So 1-inch lowering springs, and it's the handling e-Golf. I love it. Two e-Golfs in the family. Uh-huh. Not only are they the same mark, they're the same car.
I'm floored by this, but okay.
This is a great story. I love that you found stuff that works for you, though. That's the best thing is, you know, after all this, we go round and round because, you know, he's spent a decent amount of money. It's really not bad at all. After the rebates and selling the Focus and paying $500 for charging equipment at home, they're in for about $20,000, $15,000 for the 2019, plus $10,500 for the 2016, and $1,000 in wheels and springs and tires. They've done well. Let's put it that way. For cars that are just going to be around, they've done very well. I love this.
Yeah, for their commuter cars that they're actually kind of thrilled with. I mean, that's an amazing trade-out for selling the Focus and getting all those discounts. I mean, I'm applauding you for the financial success of this and the fact that it solves your daily car needs and you're both excited about it. That's a huge victory. We're a long way from, hey, guys, should I buy an i8? But this is how things happen, though. This is what's so great about these conclusions is that we become your sounding board. You send us a car debate.
We respond
what we think of that. That all rattles around in your head, and you think about, what does that mean for me now that I'm driving stuff and doing homework? And if you're Lance, you start with an i8, and now you have two e-Golfs. So there you go.
I see how we got there. Wait, no, I don't. No. It's a financial decision, and that absolutely plays into it. I love that this worked out how it did. And so they're a two e-Golf family. But what that means, everyone, is that e-Golfs are cheap, brand new.
Dealers will practically give you one
because they're wanting to get rid of them. So, you know, I love, Lance, what you did is the lowering springs, and you turn it into something just a little bit spicy, just a tiny bit.
I guess. I'm very curious to see how that drives. It'll be very interesting.
All right, so the next one here is not featured in any particular episode, but Mason T. has decided to up his budget and splurge a bit, so I would like to take this opportunity to say it does happen. And there's actually another email where somebody else actually increased their budget. So it does happen. I am justified. It doesn't always happen. But sometimes, just to sneak into the next thing because you love it, the emotions are connected to Visa and MasterCard. We all know this, right?
Yep, you're right.
So splurging a little bit means a 2014 Audi S6 for just under $36,000 with about 37,000 miles. Now,
that's pretty cool.
Tax, title, license, and a warranty, just a bit over $40,000 for everything.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He did pretty well.
I love that. He's in love with how powerful it is, how well it grips, and he says, ultimately, how comfortable and understated it is. And the prior owner had just done that very expensive 35,000-mile service, you know? And he feels like Audi has drastically improved the reliability compared to the early to mid-2000s. Well, yes, that was...
I agree with that,
you know,
for sure.
Not a huge stretch, a leap to get there. But yeah, decided to sell the BMW and pocket the difference, and he couldn't be happier. Well done, Mason.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love it when there's that total twist. I mean, how often do you hear about a BMW guy goes and buys an Audi? I just like when you're driving around, you try different things, and you wind up with something cool. And I also like here, and this happens fairly regularly, and I'm glad you put this in here, Paul, because we get a good number of emails where you guys just write to us and go, hey, you haven't heard from me before, but I listened to the podcast, and I'm listening for a while, and as a result of listening, here's what I went out and did, which, I'm glad that what we talk about here when we just kind of riff on people's ideas and talk about this and get off into the weeds, that inspires you guys to go, wait a minute, let me talk about all of this differently. And I'm thrilled that we have results like this. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, excellent. Well done. I love that you got something that speaks to you, because we're all looking for something different at different points in life. So comfort and understatement was Mason's desire, and he got it. I love that. Excellent.
So we also had Andy that wrote in from episode 276, and this one's a little bit complex, but we'll see if we can break this down a bit. Andy had a Cayman that he wasn't really driving, and maybe should he move on and all this kind of stuff. So he sold his Cayman, and they helped finding a house and closing on a house, and life happened, and he pretty much instantly started looking at Caymans again, and he realized,
of course,
I've made a terrible mistake.
As you do.
But, you know, exactly. So, but the house, you know, okay, we have a house. I'm not going to use a car that often. I take the train to work. If I'm going to get another car, I probably need one for you know, errands and stuff. So Andy thinks, all right, I love how this breaks down. He said, all right, I need the occasional car. It should be practical, enough space for groceries, something, you know, realistic. And so he bought a 2011 Boxster Spider. Which is exactly that list. I mean, I love this, Andy. What actually happened? You end up acknowledging the fact that you also bought a really like no money Volvo V50 wagon to haul the dog around and to use as a winter beater. That was the actual car that was the reality car. But you splurged. You got yourself the 6-speed 2011 Boxster Spider, which is a genuinely special car.
Oh yeah,
and you are thrilled. What I find hysterical is you sold the Cayman you weren't driving much. And now you bought a Boxster Spider, which I do think was an upgrade. Well done.
Did you see the note in here where his wife has zero interest in ever learning how that top works? Like, it is one of the fussiest, most
it
complex.
Yeah.
It's like putting this weird canvas diaper on the top of your car, and you just...
that description.
What is it, clip it? Now let me unfold the directions again. And
the canvas diaper. I do like that. That's horrifying but funny. Yeah.
But I'm just glad to hear that you're going to be driving it more and that, yeah, you've got the beater Volvo V50. So that's excellent. Well done. All right. So episode 320 from David Elfring writes to us and he says, today I'm the ecstatic guy who just drove home a brand new Tornado Red 2018 Volkswagen GTI.
Very cool. Good.
Very cool.
What I like about this is this came out of an episode where we were trying to kill your Camry for you. We were really trying to get you to move on from the Camry.
It worked.
And we gave you lots of driving homework, and you went and dutifully drove all kinds of things, including things way beyond the stuff we recommended. You just drove all kinds of
20
stuff.
20 cars.
Monster list.
On the list.
Yes, monster list of things you drove. I am so impressed. What I like about this is you got that GTI. You can't believe how for you it checks almost every box, including color. Bravo, by the way, on getting the good Tornado Red. That's awesome. What I like about this is the fact that you drove so much that you found the car that you really went, this is the one for me. That is fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, the part of the email that really struck me, David, is the part where you said you're going to be hitting autocrossing again for the first time since 1987, but you know, you're also going to be taking 500-mile car trips. You're now doing it all with that one car, which is
great. It's phenomenal. Yeah.
And the homework, which I like, it eased his mind because he's saying, I feel good and solid. I mean, that's what the benefit of drive homework can do, is that it takes away that buyer's remorse part of it, because you know, well, what does that other car look like, you know, or drive like? The one that I was thinking about, but I never got around to driving it. I should have driven it. I'm still not sure. And then you either eventually drive it and go, I chose poorly and, you know, kind of regret your decision, or it justifies. And so that's what happened with this 20 car list of driving homework, which is
great. Man, it's a huge list. It's great, though. I love this drove that much.
And also, David writes to us and he said, I went a few thousand over because the budget was 20 grand and he went over. So I am not out of my tree. I'm not crazy.
Yeah. This is the way we actually all end up shopping. I can spend 25, you end up spending 29 or 30. That so many of us end up doing that. We tease you about it, but it does happen a lot for sure.
You'll never feel it in your monthly payment. Just stretch it out to 72 months. No problem. You'll never feel it. You'll always be making payments.
You're starting to sound like the finance department of pretty much any car dealer on the planet. That's frightening.
Exactly.
Also, Max and Vessie wrote in from Durango, and they're big fans of the podcast. Thank you so much. And they live in Durango, and they've invited us mountain biking and on the $1 million highway, both of which are things I'd like to do.
But oh, heck yeah.
He drives a big Chevy 2500 with studded snow tires all winter as a plow truck. And he realized, you know what? I think I got the winter car covered. So why don't I get something fun? For a while, he was thinking, you know, let's be realistic and let's not get a sports car. And then he thought, wait, I have the winter car completely sewn up. And his wife has a 2015 Forester with a 6-speed manual. So he started looking around at fun cars. He started at the Hyundai Genesis Coupe because of us and the fact that I won't shut up about it. He drove the 86 chassis, but then he bumped into the Z cars, the 350 and the 370. There was a kid selling a 350Z for $5,000 with 80,000 miles, already in pretty good shape, but not a car he needed to be precious about or anything. He pulled the trigger on that right away. Now his wife likes driving it almost as much as he does, and it's changed the way she drives her Forester. This is like a victory across the board. I love this.
No kidding. Well, they've got two dogs that ride in the back seat, but, you know, that was the Forester that she's driving. So, the dogs ride around. They're happy. And I love, Vessie, that you are now driving your Forester faster and talking about body roll. Because you would
this
have never experienced
it.
If you probably switch tires. If you haven't, you'll get there, you know, once the tires, you know, you'll need some new ones. And then you're driving faster and you're experiencing corners in a different way. And when you start discussing dynamics when you get out of the car instantly.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. So yeah, thank you guys for writing into us. And we'd love to get out to Durango at some point. We do need to go mountain biking, and they sent us pictures of finishing off their drive, and then what they were going to do later in the day was go mountain biking themselves. So that was really cool. Some nice photos
from
you guys.
Yeah.
Really, really cool to hear. So again, thanks to all of you for writing to us and sharing your life with us, and we get to tell everybody, because I really do think that it's kind of satisfying in a way, in a very strange way. We all get to hear what you bought, and you know what are people thinking? Hey, Todd, Paul, that was, you know, nice suggestion and all, but I went a totally different direction over here and I found something I love. So the stories are great. And if it doesn't matter that you weren't featured on the podcast, that your story wasn't, it really doesn't matter. We'd love to hear the stories. And so we're continually building these up, hopefully do them every once in a while. But it just struck me as it's time again. We need to share these stories because
I agree.
I love it. We just get to hear what everybody bought and what, you know, lights everybody's candle. It's pretty cool.
Very cool. Well, we have another car debate coming up here, a brand new fresh car debate for you, plus so many questions. I'm not even sure what we're going to deal with all of them. But we'll be back in just a minute with that car debate for Ben.
We're often asked how we find the cars we recommend because we do a lot of research for the show. Local or nationwide, our searches start with our friends at Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car site separately, you can enter your parameters into Auto Tempest one time and search them all at once.
You can see results from Cars.com, Cars Direct, eBay, and more, or you can jump to AutoTrader and CarGurus without entering anything new. You can even search all of Craigslist nationwide. You know how hard it is to search Craigslist all at once? You can with AutoTempest.
AutoTempest can help you find your next new or used car if there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the entire country. Plus, the folks at AutoTempest actually do listen to this very podcast right along with you, and they're always looking for ways to refine the site to make it better. They already have research tools, buyer and seller guides, and are listening to what features users want.
So if we give you drive homework, or you're chasing your dream car, or you're just looking to feed the disease, AutoTempest.com is the place to start. Heck, I was on it an hour ago. Ben is writing to us with a car for his wife, so he needs to buy a car for his wife, and then he's wanting a little something for himself, because he currently is bombing around in a company car. It's a huge truck, he says, a freakishly large Toyota Sequoia. Now, he's got a cheap Miata for autocrossing and track duty, and he loves it. But then his wife agreed to let him consult us for her next car choice, and there's no budget in there. But that's you know, we kind of understand the budget from the fact that she drives an 07 Forester, but no budget and no real requirements either, which was very interesting. Well, no, here's what it has to have, or I'm not considering X brand, something like that. It was just, hey, I'm open. Very cool. Very interesting.
Well, but he gets down here to the bottom, though, and he does say he'd love it if it could be automatic, but no CVTs, because he does want that to kind of land and not be something he hates. And he would like to stay under 20 grand, even though he's kind of gone, you know, surprise me, guys. So that's pretty interesting, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, even though he's already autocrossing the Miata, he says the new one will also be autocrossed occasionally. Probably not as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
yeah.
They're into it, which is pretty cool. As I said, his wife drives this 07 Forester. It's got high miles on the way out. And so we need to decide on something for her. But she's agreed to consider a car that is engaging for him to drive. So, since he's doing the company car thing, he needs something else. But listen to this statement. Her dad drives a 2018 Volvo V60 T5, and they both like that car.
Mm-hmm.
That has influenced my thinking Ben.
Yeah,
that,
for sure. Yeah.
That car alone. I'm not going that direction. But by the way, for your 15 to 20 grand budget, you can actually buy those. I went looking because I thought, 2018s, you can at least get into 2016. So just FYI, if that really is something you like, but I just don't see a Volvo V60 being autocrossed successfully. Maybe, but I'm not seeing it.
I mean, you can autocross anything, but coming from a Miata and now you're in a Volvo V60, I think you're going to wish you were in something else. I just think it's going to happen. They are cool, though, and I want to support you guys. If that Volvo V60 speaks to you, I agree with you, Paul. It's on my list for the same reason. They could just go get one if that car's speaking to them, but I've got four other options I want to talk through for sure.
Four? I went with one. I think I found your car.
Oh, good. Excellent. What is it?
Well, I'm going to start with her car first. Coming out of 07 Forester, I'm going even smaller, but it's still got a surprising amount of space. And it's also a Mazda, so both of you will have Mazdas. Yay! It is a CX-3. I'm thinking a CX-3 will actually start to feel more nimble and lighter than the Forester you're currently in. And they're... Yeah, you sell that car, however much you can get for the Forester... The best part is they're not that expensive. Even 1 or 2 years old, they're not that much.
True, yeah, yeah.
So they're an easy choice to consider. And I think you'd have a lot of fun. I don't know your space requirements, and that's the only issue there. I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, yeah, I see that. Yeah, they're not very big, but they do drive well. You get the little bit of... I mean, the Forester is an almost CUV anyway, so you stay in that kind of world.
Yeah.
Great styling, good new tech. I see that for sure.
Ben, this Volvo... It's. I'm thinking about this car. And so I went hunting. Again, for your budget, I went to a car that you and I have very rarely, I don't think if ever, we have talked about.
Hmm.
It is the E91 BMW wagon. It is essentially the Touring, which is essentially a short wagon. If you already like the V60, you already like that wagon, welcome to a rear-wheel drive BMW with a real transmission. Whether you get manual or automatic, manuals are going to be tough to find, but you can do it. But certainly an automatic. And with that kind of budget, those cars, the early, we'll say the 08s to 2010s, they're in the $12,000 range. So with 15 to 20, you can go find yourself the lowest mile wagon, some of the last wagons we get in the U.S. Again, rear-wheel drive. And I'm not talking, obviously they're not the M3. You can get 330, but even the 328 of that era, you're getting a great package. They turn my head still. And with the right stance, right wheels and tires, so you can go find yourself a really low mile example with 15,000 and then be your heart is, you know, not troubled by the upcoming maintenance and whatever that is, even though, you know, it's a BMW. It's going to be a little bit more high strung, but I mean, I'm seeing them for 70 to 100,000 miles for sale for 12 grand. So I'm thinking, go get yourself a 40,000 mile car for 15 and be done.
Okay.
Right.
Sure.
There.
And it's just not common. I see that. That's an excellent choice.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. They're all over. They're everywhere. So something
I didn't
to consider.
Always stay with wagons. Those are good. I didn't
and
always
you can
stay with wagons on my choices.
I mean, who autocrosses that?
You certainly could.
Be
You're
really
right.
interesting.
You're right. That's good.
Really,
that's good.
Yeah.
I didn't always stay with wagons on this, but I agree with you, Paul. That B70 Volvo is the thing that really kind of turns this whole discussion.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right, let's see, Ben. Here's what I'm thinking for you and your wife. I think I like the Forester idea. I see where she's going there. So, okay, let's get something that feels like a normal full-size car with good space front and back. If we can do a hatch, some of mine are hatchy. If you can do a hatch, great. But I also thought about that fact that you need to enjoy driving it. And hopefully by you enjoy driving it, she'll enjoy driving it more. She'll understand those dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I'm staying under your $20,000 budget. What about head over to Infiniti? If you can get a Q50, great. If not, you're back to a G37. But either way,
That
is a really good, reliable, rear-wheel drive, four-door sedan with some decent luxury. It's going to feel like a nice upgrade from that Forester. It is, if you will, it's the BMW dynamics and idea without the scary maintenance. That's really what those are. So look at the Infiniti G37 Q50. While you're there, look, we have to go to the competition, which is the current Lexus IF 350. Get the F-Sport if you can. That's a car that's just going to surprise you because it surprised us. As we drove it, we kept thinking, this is a really great all-arounder. And it is rear-wheel drive. It's all of those things. So the IS350 is really compelling. The overlooked car in this area, I'm staying sedans, is the Acura TL with the super handling all-wheel drive. Rear-wheel drive. Yes, it is. But look for that TL. Try to find one a little bit post-Beak era. But look for that Acura TL. That is an overlooked brand and is an overlooked car, and the dynamics on Acuras never fail to surprise us, and the TL is almost always better than we think it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think shop the Acura TL. Because they are mostly overlooked, they don't hang on to their value that well. You can get deals on them even new, but they don't hang on their value that well. And it's a Honda, so it's going to run, and the maintenance is going to be straightforward. So there's that. And then if you really want to stay hatch and you really want to stay practical, but you want to have an actual gearbox, then you need to shop. Maybe you can get a Golf R, but you're probably going to be more in the GTI with the DSG, because you're going to get a good enthusiast gearbox, and she's going to get a good hatchback with modern dynamics and good space front and rear. $20,000 for that, you can make it happen. One of those is my choice for you.
Sure, I can see that. I like the Lexus. I mean, I think the IS250 is, I don't know that you should go there, because the dynamics and the power of the 350 are what surprised us. And now,
I agree, as you said,
they're now in a sweet spot as far as price. But the 250, just, I think you'll find it lacking, even though it seems like the good deal because they're cheaper and almost there.
Yeah,
but
I
do think you need to consider the 350, especially the F-Sport. But
I agree with that. And if you're chasing just dynamics, I don't know your styling thing. I'm just thinking of this as we're talking about it. If you're chasing dynamics first, you can get a Cadillac ATS for your budget all day long. But
you
is not styling that everybody likes, and it's obviously, again, not a hatch. The thing is, you may end up in the four-cylinder for that money. You really don't want the four-cylinder. You want the six-cylinder on that car. So maybe that's in your budget. Maybe it's not. But if you are doing a bunch of drive homework, you should throw in the ATS while you're at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those used Cadillacs actually now come from the dealership with a Sawzall, so you can cut the Q system out of the dash and then actually put something in that you like, so that
I'm sure somebody can wire you something better in there for sure. That'd be a short trip to wind up better for sure.
Just grind that out of dash. Anyway, I kid. All right, thank you for writing to us. Really appreciate it. Again, if you've got your own debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or on the website where you're perusing the Utah adventure coming at us really fast, and the pilgrimage trip as well. So go there and send us an email for all kinds of reasons. And by the way, Topic Tuesdays have been pouring in, so thank you for that. We've got a load of them lined up. Very cool. All right, jumping to questions from Shane M. Driving etiquette question from a recovering New York City driver who communicates using the horn.
Okay.
Yeah. How would you handle a senior driving in an erratic manner? His natural inclination is to use the horn, but he fears it might make things worse. I'm not saying a really great way out of this one, to be honest.
Mm. Yeah,
especially, you would feel terrible if you caused an accident, either with another car or him whoever that is, the senior, male or female, whoever it is, if they just freak out and they, oh my gosh, and they hit something, you'd feel pretty bad. So
yeah, you don't want to honk and startle the already overwhelmed driver. That's absolutely true.
I feel like this is a tough one. You might just have to clench and grit your teeth and bite the towel and just try to get through it because...
How can you get around them is the big thing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you want to get around them as quickly as you can, but ultimately give them a wide berth and I hope for the best, I guess. That's a tough one.
Our answer is hope for the best.
That's my life strategy right there. It's just hope for the best.
That's hysterical. I love it. Becca Walker wrote in on Facebook and said, as someone who knows nothing about wrenching on my own cars, should I even consider purchasing a BRZ that's had a supercharger already put on it, the Jackson Racing one, which is really well known to be really well reliable? Becca, I want to speak to you on this and also anybody else considering buying somebody else's car that they've built or a car that is factory but you don't know how to wrench on cars. That's fine. There isn't a requirement. There's nothing listed anywhere. Honestly, I know enough about wrenching on cars that I will probably make something worse. I mean, I can do a few things, but a lot of times I'm...
Well, you're not rebuilding an engine in your spare time with your 2-week vacation.
No, I'm really not. Exactly. And that's the big thing for me is I've started to realize that, you know what? My time is better served elsewhere for the person that can do it with the right tools and half the time and frustration it would take me, and I won't have any bloody knuckles anymore. So you know what? I should just pay somebody to do this right. But if you're not even gonna ponder doing your own maintenance, that's fine. But the trick is you have to find the person you trust to work on that car first. And so find somebody in your local area that not only you trust as a mechanic, but then do they have any experience with these cars in supercharged form? If not, then chase your local forums and find out where guys with supercharged versions take their cars. So if you have somebody lined up that has worked on those cars with those superchargers, then I wouldn't think twice. If you're just like, I'll buy one, I don't know how to wrench on it, but I'll take it to my local mechanic who's never seen this before, that could get you into trouble.
Yeah. All right. Add the man's. Has asked, how soon is too soon to be looking at new cars after you buy one? 30 seconds to a minute is too soon, but 3.5 minutes later is probably okay. And consider this, it's all in the name of research. You're just, you know, mm-hmm. seeing what the market conditions are doing and what the market can bear and what new things have come out and did you make the right choice? And, you know, if you haven't done extensive driving homework, you're probably wondering, buyer's remorse. But if you have, maybe it's, you know, assuaged your fears and you're doing okay. But I say, honestly, all joking aside, of course, we're always looking. It's no problem.
Yeah,
I mean, we're comparing, ooh, I got a good deal, or ooh, I paid way too much, or you know, whatever that is. We're always doing research because we're always learning. We're constantly learning about the market for that car, our favorite mm-hmm. car, our favorite mm-hmm. brand, whatever that is. It's fine. There's no shame. Honestly, it's all in the name of science.
It is, but here's the thing. We talk about it. You talk about it as the hole that you throw your money down. We all have that thing that we're obsessed with, whether we have enough of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is going to sound cliche, but my wife really loves shoes. She has a lot of great shoes, okay? She really loves shoes.
She's been known to take shoes on vacation, like extra suitcases.
Yeah, she has been known to take multiple pairs of shoes.
You've mentioned this.
Yes, for sure. It's like we're going to be gone for 3 days and there's like 7 pairs of shoes going. I'm like, what? are we just doing like pit stops to change shoes?
You're over there with your toothbrush. Like, what?
I have a toothbrush, a pair of shoes, and a t-shirt that'll work for driving whatever car. That's really where I'm headed. Anyway, you know, I brought the pair of pants I'm wearing on the plane and one extra shirt. I'm good. Thankfully, my wife puts up with me. But this is the thing. The number of times she says to me, she says, oh, look at these. And invariably, whenever she says that, she turns her phone around and it's a pair of shoes.
Awesome.
It's not like, and she does it, and I'm going somewhere with this. She does it, honestly, I'm aware of the fact that she just bought a pair. Okay. And she'll
even
still do this.
Better.
This is what we're like as car people. Just be careful. Here's my caveat here. Be careful about your significant other when they see you looking at more, let's be honest, more car porn. All right?
Yeah.
You just bought a car. You're supposed to be done now for a
bit.
But you're looking again. Just be careful. You may have to navigate that thing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
How long
they're expecting
the
at least it depends on the conversation you've had with your significant other. But that person that loves you in spite of you, just be careful that you're going to have to navigate that discussion at some point. I've got one here from Brian writing in on Facebook. Interesting question because this leads me down a kind of a rabbit trail here. He says he's debating getting a brand new Stinger GT as his daily. Would we recommend that? He said most of the ones he finds are all-wheel drive, but he's listened to us, and he's thinking about how many times, how rarely, let's be honest, he actually thinks he'll need all-wheel drive. So he's thinking, why not get a rear-wheel drive version and just enjoy that more, get proper tires? I love all of this, Brian. I think that's fantastic. I say do it. Then you stop for a second and you go, I'm not certain about Kia from a reliability standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, look, I know it gets the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty and all of that. He said, I know about all of that. But he's acknowledging the fact that he normally keeps his cars for about 150,000, maybe more, miles. So he's concerned. If you are concerned, I'm sure Kia has this, and I know aftermarket companies have this. You could get the extended warranty. If you really plan to keep the car that long, you can always get an extended warranty, factory or otherwise. But the thing that I was struck by here, Brian, is that warranty that was created for Hyundai and Kia. And I read a fascinating discussion, an internal discussion that happened when they first did that. This is how, and we've joked about it before, how marketing sometimes drives everything that actually happens in the making of the car. Hyundai and Kia, when they first came out, and we can all remember this, they were a joke. They were the, oh my gosh, cars from Korea, but you can get one stupid cheap. So it's the cheapest car in America. And at least, you know, if you need a new car, you can get one, and they're disposable and they fall apart and they're ugly. And they had all of that stuff initially. Somewhere along the line, somebody in the marketing department, I don't know when it happened specifically, but they decided, we're going to say, we're going to create and back the biggest warranty in the industry, 10-year, 100,000 miles, because that's going to make people buy our stuff and take it seriously. And they did that, and it did begin to, over time, transform the brand. But the thing that you don't think about that absolutely happened internally is all of the engineers and the folks designing and building the cars suddenly went, oh, crap. Because they realized they actually had to start, and it happened behind the scenes. They didn't advertise it, but this happened. They had to start designing and building their cars differently and better because the company ultimately was putting their financial gain on the line to not have to try to fix them as much. So as a result, almost like back timing from the marketing decision, the cars got better as a result. I think, Brian, you shouldn't be worried about the reliability of that Kia. I think it's going to be excellent.
Brian, I'm going to answer this just slightly differently with an example of a woman named Farah Haynes. At the end of 2018, had driven her 2013 Hyundai Elantra 1 million miles in 5 years. Verified by Hyundai.
That's right.
It's still on the original powertrain. She had the dual clutch transmission clutch pack replaced at 347,000 miles and the entire transmission replaced at 545,000 miles.
All viable changes, yes.
Yes. And Hyundai was sort of like, what? Are you sure? And so they went out and they verified it, plugged it in, verified the VIN and the odometer. The odometer couldn't keep up because it couldn't display more than six digits.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it.
So, yes, it happens. You could always say, well, that's just a one-off car. I'm with Todd. I mean, over time, car companies are learning, and they're now at a place where there's no question in my mind. Any car will need maintenance, but there's no question that they're absolutely in that category, which leads me to a secondary question similar from Adam Dalebrew on Twitter, who's asking, would we prefer and why for commuting, hauling, and spirited driving, of course, the GLA 45 or the Kia Stinger GT? Because he said now both can be had for just about $30,000 to $35,000. He said, obviously the Kia is newer with lower miles. Okay, either way, I think it's going to be just fine. I have very little qualms. Again, there's always exceptions to every rule. I'm doing the CYA thing right now just to, you know, 90% of the time. But generally speaking, they're at the level of, I wouldn't hesitate to buy one. Honestly, I mean, I wouldn't. So at this point, GLA versus Kia Stinger, I'd go GLA. That Kia could be more reliable, ultimately, in the long run. It's just a larger, heavier, not as fun car and compared to the GLA 45. Doesn't really compare in that category. If you're getting after it, you're going to love how that GLA handles. But then there's the power of the Stinger. I mean, you can't deny that. So it kind of depends on what you're looking
car.
For.
Much, much bigger car.
Oh, yeah. They're not really a comparison. But I think both you and I, Todd, would go after the GLA. But again, from
just because it's smaller and more chuckable. Yeah,
there's still a great amount of space in there. It's the grown-up hot hatch, really.
It's absurd, but it is.
You've graduated to middle management. Hey, welcome to Mercedes, right? I kid.
Ed the Sled asked a question that I read it, and then I was struck by my answer and then surprised by my own answer. He wrote on Instagram, he said, what car available only in all-wheel drive would you convert to rear-wheel drive?
Oh.
And I thought of one, and I really like this, and I wish it was possible. It's the Subaru WRX. I think that car should be available both ways. Look, Subaru hangs on to actually making that 50-50 symmetrical all-wheel drive. It's not the thing that you see with the Haldex clutch where it actually is a front-wheel drive car and it throws power to the rear. No, it's all-wheel drive all the time, which is very cool. It's their thing that does create a very reliable, safe, understeer-prone chassis in the WRX. I'm not saying it's not fun because we recommend them all the time. But what if that car... you could just buy it in rear-wheel drive form. Why not? They just don't put the front drive running gear in it. It's already set up to take power to the rear. It's not like it occasionally does. It always does. That would answer this question that we keep coming up against, which is, guys, I want an affordable, mid-sized, rear-wheel drive sedan. I'm an enthusiast. Where is this car? It's the WRX without front-running gear.
Yeah, I like that. Solid, I can see that.
Solid power, tunable, and I think in rear-wheel drive form, I think the handling would be only improved. I genuinely think so.
I'm thinking about Audis. I feel like we love Audis for what they are, but could really love them more if front ends felt lighter and turned in quicker, and they're not solving the problem by putting wider tires in the front or trying to just let's change the engine around to change how that car handles. What if Audi did a genuine rear wheel drive model? What if the TT were rear wheel drive only?
That's great. Or I was even thinking the S5. Those are two cars in the lineup I think would be amazing as rear wheel drive cars. I love that. That's great.
Well, I don't think any of us think of them on the same level as BMW when you're shopping hardcore enthusiast car like an M235i. What does Audi have that competes against that car? Name the car. What is it? I'm genuinely asking. I don't know.
It's supposed to be the A-Class, S-Class, but we've driven those back-to-back, and the BMW has that better steering feel because it's rear-wheel drive. I hear you. Completely hear you.
So what if Audi made that, and Audi is closer than Mercedes to bringing a manual back, I think. And they could offer it if they were wanting to do something, but you know they're off in e-tron land right now, so you know.
Well, but they could pull the gearbox straight from the Golf, the GTI.
They could pull
that 6-speed over and be done. Yeah, I love that. The 6-speed manual rear wheel drive TT would be the business. That's a very cool idea.
Yeah, something like that. All right. Well, you know, we can dream. Dawson Johannes is asking a design question. Do we find the corporate look to be a clever use of design or a lazy method of designing an entire line of cars? I find nothing lazy about it because continually giving it the corporate look and updating it and not offending BMW X7 and new 7 Series, not offending your customers by making it oversized and too big. I feel like
everything's better with shields on the front, Paul. Come on, shields.
It's
you can take them off and like
you
can defend the neighborhood with those shields. It can be great.
Can. The jokes write themselves. They're shields for the kids with swords. Anyway, I'm thinking about long term and continually updating things. Look at the kidney grills on BMWs and how they have changed over the years from very tall and vertical, and then they went really wide and horizontal, and then they're back to somewhere in the middle. And you know, the elements that we see on all the cars, it's difficult to achieve it and then keep updating it over time to keep that looking fresh. But what if everybody claims at this point, Dawson, that cars look all the same? Think about that. If the general perception now with good corporate design is that everything looks the same. What if every car were willy-nilly? Well, that Corolla kind of looks like a Mercedes. And that's kind of weird from Audi. I never saw that coming. You know, so it's very important from a branding perspective, from a moving up in the model range. They want you as a customer in the A3, A4, somewhere in there because you're aspiring to the S class or the S7 or, you know, the RS7 or an R8 one day. Same with BMW.
Sure.
Every car company
wants to offer
products throughout the range. You and I have been talking about this. I mean, Honda does it. Everybody does it. If they don't offer a particular niche model that's even very similar to one on either side of it, they'll still lose sales. So corporate design is very important, but the most clever companies use the same parts without making you realize they're using the same parts. That's the trick.
Yeah, there's cost sharing there as well. I think it's a great idea because of the branding discussions you're having. I really wish they would give themselves freedom that occasionally there are cars that are going to break the rule because they just can't fit the corporate grill, especially when it's Halo cars. I wish the Halo cars would be allowed to be kind of whatever. But because I don't think the current Nissan V helped the GTR at all. But I mean that I understand why it's on there, you know. So the Audi corporate grille has been shoehorned on the R8. Okay, but what if it didn't have to have that? I think the exceptions can be made, but there's got to be that branding consistent thing throughout, and that's why they do it for sure.
Well, you don't ever want to ask the question of like, "Wow, that's a Porsche? Yeesh." Yeah. Or
fair.
Huh? I'm not seeing it, Ferrari. That's kind of weird and crazy, but I'm not seeing it. Or name the brand. Because they want that look. So when you look at it, it's, some cars look like a dropped pizza, and some cars look like they've got a squid laying across the back, and that's the spoiler. And
fair.
They want you to be able to recognize it in the parking lot, and so that's why they're trying increasingly different things, and they want to show you this is the direction we're going, and it all ties into where their future is going, and they see with, autonomous driving and all that kind of stuff, they want to integrate that into the future. So it's incremental steps, baby steps, because once you feel like you've tried it all, then what do you do?
Yeah, for sure. Fastline Motorsports on Instagram asked a question I'm going to kind of answer. I'm going to try to answer it for you and for everybody else. He said, can you give me details on the East Coast meetup? First thing to know is that because we're just kind of marching through our year and hitting the madness as it strikes us, we don't have everything locked in right now because that'll be right after the pilgrimage trip. So we're just trying to kind of step through events as they happen. Again, we have the Utah meetup coming, then the pilgrimage trip, then hopefully, we're intending in October will be the East Coast meetup. We're intending the Atlanta area. I do not have a date for you yet. We're intending the Atlanta area with hopefully very similar to the Utah meetup. There will be some meals. There will be a road tour. There will be a track day. It'll be around a track day that's already being done by a local group. It is discussed for October. I don't have dates, but my understanding based on all of our madness and the fact that we will have been in Germany the beginning of October, it'll be the back half of October. Should it happen? I can't guarantee it's happening right now just because we are, season 5's happening as well. That's what's happening in my head right now. But many other things, we aren't forgetting it, so we'll let you know as soon as we know more.
Christian Everett is a driving coach out at Speed Vegas and a fan of the show. Chris, thanks for writing in. He's asking, what causes the haze on the inside of the windshield, and can you prevent it? It seems to be clean on the inside of his Lotus windshield, once every few days, but then the haze comes right back. My solution for this?
Yes, it does.
Actually, Stephen Hartman, you called it. It's the plastics in the car still off-gassing. They can off-gas years later. That's essentially what the new car smell is. It's all the fabrics and the plastics sort of releasing their chemical smell into the air after production. And so this can happen. Different cars do it differently. It's a combination of smog and dust in the air, and there's really no way to prevent it. But I do have a secret for you. Of course, cleaning it means elbow grease, but what you want to do is wipe back and forth one direction on the inside of the windshield and the opposite direction on the outside of the windshield. So you know when you're looking, you're trying to find the dirty spot, you know inside or outside where it is. You can instantly tell.
For sure.
That's
for
the
sure.
secret on actually getting it clean. Don't wipe the same direction on the inside and the outside because you'll chase your tail and you'll be going crazy. So maybe horizontal on the inside and then vertical up and down on the outside, and then you can instantly tell where the smudge is. It's very helpful.
Wow. It's good luck chasing the clean Lotus windshield, because that may be the car cleaning bane of my existence, Chris. So just letting you know that. And I actually have found the Lotus being small enough that I almost always just go horizontal on the outside and vertical on the inside, because the inside of the cabin is so tight that it's hard to do anything else. And you can reach all the way across the windshield while standing beside the car, so you can go horizontally on the outside. So hopefully
very
that works
few cars
well.
Can you do this on.
This
very,
is true.
Very few.
This is very true.
All right. Hunter Brooks et al. Drove a 1M a couple of days ago. Now he's dying to buy a 135i because, who can afford an M? But he's afraid it won't be enough after driving the M. Look, it's hard to drive a car and then not be able to buy it. We agree.
True. Very true. Absolutely. Yep.
But getting close and being able to get close enough where a part or two or a tire change, something simple, can bring you to that almost level that you're still satisfied that you spent, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000, $15,000 less than the car you wanted, that still factors in. You still have to remind yourself because it's not immediately visible. You can't, you know, oh, that's right. You got to remind yourself. I spent 20 grand less than a 1M and I got this that still makes me, I don't know, 85%, 90% as happy. Maybe it's 75%.
Yeah.
The gauge is only for you to determine.
Yeah.
But you just have to remember how much money you saved.
Well, and I also think that the play here is not, he said, can I get a 135i? Will I be happy enough? Don't get the 135i. Chase the 135is. It is the almost 1M.
Yeah,
you
good
will
point.
Still
Very
save money. That one will be pretty close, and you won't have the, oh my gosh, I've got a 1M. I couldn't really afford it, and therefore I have to keep it in the garage factor. You'll avoid the preciousness thing. But the 135IS is very close in many, many ways. I think that's the chase.
Another quick question for me from Brian Penn. Asking recommendations for wet road tires for a 981 base Cayman. Well, if you can't spring for the Michelin PS4s, which are great, summer tires, generally speaking, are great for both wet and dry conditions. So manufacturers
Hopefully,
take
yes.
that in consideration.
They intend for them to be, yeah.
Unless it's a step above that, you're going towards tracking and it's, you know, a shave tire, whatever that is. But I will say Goodyear puts the Eagle F1 as standard on the 981 Cayman GTS. And those were pretty darn good in the wet, but I also like Continentals and Kumho. Interestingly enough, I'll bet Kumho makes a size for you that is pretty similar to the Michelin's, to be honest. I was told way back when by the dealer that they use the same rubber supplier. I cannot corroborate or verify that. And the way Kumho saves money is, of course, very little advertising, which is in contrast to Michelin. But we like Kumho's. Those are the tires that, you know, I've had experience with, and I think something in that range you'd be very, very happy with.
I agree with that. I have one last one. That's from JDoherty787. He was talking about brand ambassadors. And if we could be the brand ambassador for a car company, who would it be? And, Paul, you can't pick Porsche, and I can't pick Lotus.
Okay.
Who would we be a brand ambassador for? I honestly think I'm going to say Mazda.
I could see that. Yeah.
Look, the Miata is a fantastic car, of course. It's the all-purpose classic rear-wheel drive roadster done right. But they do a really good job of having all of their cars in all market segments be surprisingly good, especially in handling dynamics. I would back Mazda for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm toying with the idea of BMW, but it seems like a foregone conclusion. It seems too easy. You know, I
really thought you'd say Kia. I really did.
I suppose Kia, yeah. Yeah. But maybe, you know what? It'd have to be Hyundai. It'd have to be Hyundai, for sure.
Really?
Because of the N line of cars. That's why.
Ah, all right. Okay, I see that.
And
for
Kia's
sure.
Kia's not doing
those
that.
Those are excellent.
The N line, okay. Yeah, it'd be Hyundai. Yeah. Interesting.
There you go. You heard it here.
Holy moly. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Really appreciate all your questions and your engagement. Honestly, it keeps it entertaining because Todd and I
sure,
say, hey, did you see who wrote to us? Look at this question.
For
oh, my gosh.
All the time.
It's hilarious.
All the time that happens. Absolutely. Yeah. And if you are listening and you have not rated or reviewed the podcast yet, we would really appreciate that because that helps keep it in the upper podcast for automotive and it helps other people find it. You wouldn't believe the number of people that write us about, hey, I was just looking for an automotive podcast and yours came up, which is awesome. That also works just as well for Amazon Prime, where you can find all of our TV episodes. You can rate and review them there. You can do the same on IMDb. These all help the big scary algorithm work in our favor, so we would appreciate it for sure.
Yep. Thanks again, guys. Until next time. Cheers, everyone.